You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we don't care if you consent. You're going to listen to this podcast and you're going to like it. Hashtag podcast rape. If you enjoy this show, feel free to check out our flagship show. You can find it at themidside.com/podcast or iTunes. It's been a long, long time since I was actually legitimately upset at a player being voted out. In fact, the last player that I was upset about him being voted out was Ted in Survivor Thailand. Yeah, that's a long time ago. That's when I was still in college. That's a decade ago. Literally a decade. That's more than a decade ago when Survivor Thailand aired. And I was mad because Ted's a legitimately good guy, and he went through a lot of crap on that show. I mean, being accused of sexual assault, basically, by Gandia. Can you imagine if that happened in today's day and age? He would be run off the show. It would have just been ridiculous. And I thought because of his, you know, morality and integrity, he deserved to win Survivor. And when he was voted out, I was very upset about it. Obviously, I've since learned that that was because of the great gameplay of Brian Heidick and why he had to go home, because who knows if Brian could have beaten him in the jury vote. But that is the last time I was upset. It was a major learning lesson for me in Survivor. And you know, I've learned a lot, and I'm pretty jaded and I'm pretty non-emotional about it these days. But this vote and seeing what happened to Malcolm, I felt really bad for him. I actually was upset. Not because I'm a Malcolm fan. I am the furthest thing from a Malcolm fan. Not that I don't appreciate him as a character. He's a good character. He's a smart guy. He brings a lot to the show. He's just not really the kind of player I like. I mean, Malcolm, Joe, they're both the same characters to me. So bring either of them back, and they'll continue to bring them back because these are character types that people love. I didn't particularly want him to win. I wasn't cheering for him, but to see someone lose in this way, it's tough to watch. Because at the end of the day, despite all the production and everything that goes into fabricating this, and I'm using that word very intentionally, these are real people having a real experience. And as a competitor and someone who grew up playing sports and loved sports, to see someone lose in that way is very, very difficult to watch and accept. And I think there are some interesting questions to ask about the twist and the idol find in play, and seeing those in conjunction that strikes to the heart of what Survivor is. Joining me this trip from a flyover state, the David Healy. David, how did you feel about that tribal council and the result?
Oh man, it was definitely an interesting thing to watch. I had mixed emotions. Like, the tribal council itself was very exciting and intriguing, and I was glued to my TV, but at the same time, I was pretty disappointed to see Malcolm go. I actually am a Malcolm fan. I wouldn't compare him to Joe at all, honestly. I think he's much more, much more strategic. I mean, he is a very well-rounded player. I don't think Joe has much to him other than his physical game. But yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking to see Malcolm go. He was my favorite guy this season. And I think he was on a very good path to do well in this game. So it just sucks that he got the rug pulled out from under him just like that.
Yeah, it's one of those, and we saw this very early on with Twist and Survivor, and we haven't really seen it as much in the late seasons, but it's one of those where a player is set up to do very well, and then a twist just completely undercuts his game, right? I mean, I know Silas is a punching bag for Africa, but if that switch never happened, he was positioned very well to go far. This is, I mean, this moment with Malcolm is very reminiscent of that.
Yeah,
with Silas.
Yeah, I can see that. That was a thought that came to mind. Also, Aaron from China, he's another victim. So
yes, 100%. So it's kind of classic Survivor in a way, but it's kind of not, Do you think this was even fair?
I'm still coming to terms with whether I think it's fair. On some level, I do believe it was fair. It almost reminds me of a tribe switch where maybe you'll have a tribe switch and you'll have four people from one tribe and three from another tribe. And, I mean, that's something that we see on the show, and it's fair now. It was very similar to that. We had one tribe of six, one tribe of five. So it would seem like it's fair. The big difference is that with a tribe switch like that, the players get to go back to camp. They get to discuss things. And they have a bit more time to kind of figure out the lay of the land. Malcolm and his team, nobody really had a chance to do that. They did it at Tribal Council, which was what was so crazy and intriguing about the episode.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the things that was intriguing to me from a production standpoint is that they just let them do their strategy before Tribal in their original tribes, which seemed to only reinforce the tribe lines. If they had been allowed on the same beach for a little bit beforehand, I feel like that almost would have had given more of a chance to have them mix and go across tribe lines. Whereas this was just sort of like, okay, let's put two tribes at Tribal Council and have them snipe at each other, which I'm not sure if that was the actual intent of the twist, to just have it go so clearly down tribe lines.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I do think that when we think about, or when a lot of people think about what's a good episode, they think about the last 10 minutes of the episode. They forget about most of the rest of it. They think about Tribal and what goes down there. With having strategy just part of Tribal Council, it crammed all of the interpersonal interactions that we would see into this one setting, and it made for a pretty explosive moment with groups just scattering and so much going on. So it definitely added a big punch to that tribal, and I think that's good for the show. It's good for talking points afterwards. It's good for leaving a strong impression with the viewers. So they might have expected that that could be something. I doubt they even in their wildest dreams expected people to be branching off and whispering like they did. But they must have known this is gold.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like an evolution of the game that I am particularly not even comfortable with, especially from a show standpoint, where it's just people whispering to each other at Tribal Council. I mean, there were times where legitimately the camera didn't pick up the audio, so we don't know what they were whispering to each other because they couldn't do the subtitles. There were other times when there were subtitles. So from a production standpoint and from a viewer wanting to see what actually happened strategy-wise, I don't know if I'm comfortable with the fact that people are going to start branching off and having little conversations at Tribal, because this is an evolution. When did it first start? Was it Redemption Island where they first started changing votes and talking to each other at Tribal in that way?
You know, I can't think of when the first time is, but I do agree that it sets kind of a bad precedent, and we could see this more and more moving forward, which I hope does not happen. I don't mind seeing it ever so often, but if this becomes a regular thing, I think that's bad for the show, and I think the producers will realize that and put a stop to it.
Right, which is what I was very surprised about with Jeff, was I always assumed people didn't do it at Tribal Council because that was the rule and Jeff stopped them. Maybe he only let it go because it was entertaining right for this episode?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely why he didn't stop it.
All right, well, hopefully he doesn't take what you just said earlier and think of like a twist where tribes never go to the beach anymore. They just go directly from the immunity challenge result to Tribal Council. So there's more of this chaos, because I could very much see production evolving the game in that way.
Well, yeah, I think they know better than that, but it would be interesting to see if they try that out. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that. And then, you know, there's this whole conversation about Ty and the idol and how that affects the fairness of it, because that was an added layer, right? If that had happened on a normal tribal, I don't think anyone would have been that upset about it. But part of what adds to the unfairness of it, the feeling of unfairness of it, is they played this idol with Ty, or Typhon the Idol, they played it on Sierra because JT told them they were voting for Sierra, told Brad and company that his tribe was voting for Sierra. So that makes it feel unfair. And then on top of that, they didn't target Sandra. They targeted Malcolm, which doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. I mean, I understand the argument of, you know, Malcolm's a strong alpha male and post-merge he will do well, especially because he's set up well, he's smart, and also he'll do well in challenges. So I get that argument. But at the same time, it's like Malcolm said in his final words, this is how Sandra always wins. The people say, oh, we'll get her later. And they're doing it again. So that's what makes it feel unfair as well. Although, with the whole idol discussion, I want to caution with that. And I want to take a step back. Because I don't think we can forget that in Fans versus Favorites 2... Was it Fans versus Favorites 2?
I don't know. I don't know where you're going with this yet.
I can't fucking remember. I don't remember the season. The one Cochran won. Yeah. Is that Caramone. Fans versus Favorites 2? Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Because Eddie. Yeah. Okay. That's how I remember it. I remember fucking Eddie and Andrea. What the fuck is wrong with me? I will never forget the tribal council where, what, they play like three fucking idols or whatever? Or yeah, Malcolm was immune and then he had two idols?
Reynold was immune and he, Malcolm had two idols. He gave one to Eddie and played one with himself.
Yeah. That's arguably not particularly fair, but it's in the rules of the game. I mean, is it fair that that's how Philip went home in that season when he was playing a great game, a very underrated game? I agree. So... this may have been tough to watch with Malcolm, but I also found it tough to watch Philip go home in that way. So maybe this is a little bit of karma. You know, you play that type of game, this is the one thing that happens to you. And I don't literally believe in karma. My point is just that it's interesting that this happened to Malcolm when he did something similar on his last season.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That is pretty interesting. Yeah, and I think what's interesting is that if Ty hadn't played that idol on Sierra, would we hear people complain? I know I would not be complaining if Sierra got voted out.
No, I mean, I don't think anyone would complain. It wouldn't feel unfair if it was Sierra, because this is your argument from the beginning that she's not a game changer. So to see an actual game changer go out like this, it's tough to swallow. Whereas Sierra, it's just sort of like, oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is kind of interesting, kind of a side comment here, is that back at camp, we had kind of both of the tribes had an idea of who they wanted to go home. Like one tribe was saying Brad, one tribe was saying Sarah or Sandra, sorry. And we had the SDTs on both tribes kind of putting their foot down. Sandra Diaz Twine says, no, it's got to be Sierra. And Sierra Dawn Thomas was saying, no, it's got to be Malcolm.
Wow, that is a deep pull for that comparison. That is a deep pull. You're going to the initials of
well,
the characters.
Well, it is kind of crazy that they have the same initials, right? Sierra Dawn Thomas.
Sandra Diaz. Yeah, it's exactly the same. It's too bad it's not STD and it's SDT.
I guess so.
It is. It's weird how all of these things work out, huh? And that's why it kind of gives the impression that this is rigged. You can see where it's very easy somebody would get there because it's a well-crafted narrative. And there's so many of these things that line up that make it seem like it's fake, right? It makes it almost seem like it's WWE. I mean, when I say the thing about Malcolm and what happened with him in the last game and then this happens to him, you almost couldn't write that better. I mean, you couldn't write Malcolm saying, oh man, if it's me that goes because of this twist, I'm going to be cursing as I walk down the the whatever it's called, the path. And then he goes. Same thing with Caleb last week where he says, I only made it to day 9 last time. And then he makes it to day 9 this time. That really gives it the, you can see how someone would say, oh, this is rigged. Especially with, because this is something I brought up to you last week and we talked about it with Troyzan finding the idol. Because Troyzan found idols on his season. And now Ty again finds an idol on this season when he was the one who found it on the other seasons?
Yeah, I think more often than not, people who have found idols on their first season, when they come back, I think they're more than likely going to find another idol. But like I said last week, I think it's just because those type of players are the ones that are aggressively looking for idols. I don't think it's a coincidence. And I lost my train of thought. I was going to say something to your first point, but I completely lost it.
That's all right. It happens sometimes. And I think that's a very well taken point about the effort being put into Fine Idols. And remember, this came up initially with Russell Hantz, where people were like, oh, well, mm-hmm. they're just giving Russell Idols at this point because he's better for the story. But it was found out that Russell figured out that when he was near an idol, the camera would swoop towards it, or the cameraman would move towards where it was hidden, and that helped him find idols. Is that still happening, or is it just that they're putting in so much effort and they have an idea of where idols have to be hidden?
I feel like it's got to be happening. I mean, the producers love those shots where somebody's looking for an idol and it's right by them, and the cameraman has that shot, so you're kind of seeing them, and it's kind of making them look dumb. Even Russell Swan in Survivor Philippines said, the cameraman's going to just, or the camera's going to flash where the idol is, and I'm going to look so stupid. And they actually flashed where the idol was as he was saying that. So I think they like little things like that.
Well, yeah, they definitely love mocking contestants. We've noticed that over and over again. And maybe that's not a rigging, but maybe that's a game hack that some of these people have realized and learned how to use to their advantage.
That's a good word for it.
That's a game hack.
I like that.
So we're coining terms here in the Midside. It's a game hack.
Maybe it'll be on the show one day.
Yeah, when they cast me. No, I don't know. I mean, how ridiculous would that be if somebody listened to this podcast and was like, oh, man, I like that. They have game hacks. Would that be a better or worse term than the fucking, what did they call it last season? The trust
yeah,
clusters?
Yeah, it is better than that for sure.
Yeah, that's
good
right.
Good job, Justin.
Fucking whatever her
Hannah.
Name is.
Oh, my gosh,
name?
You're the worst.
Hannah.
It's been like a couple of months.
No, I was thinking about them the other day, actually, because I was thinking about who the final tribal was, and I was thinking about the edits with that and everything, and how we could learn from that edit to figure out this edit. Because one thing you pointed out, it was you who pointed it out, was Ken and his comment about we need to take the millennials right. seriously. And that obviously was his whole edit of he got to the end with the millennials by, one, taking him seriously and aligning with them, but also he lost to them. And that was foreshadowing him losing to the millennials at Final mm-hmm. Tribal. And I was thinking, oh, well, is there anything we can learn about that?
Interesting.
For the edits this season to see who has the big stories. Because one thing they always do is, even if you have a long-term edit, and it was clear Ken had a long-term edit, when they have that, they will put in little comments like that to foreshadow what's going to happen. For instance, that's why I'm so high on Haley this season in her edit, because of her comment, they're all going to be snakes, but I'm going to be, what, the cobra,
yeah,
she said?
Or the vipers. Oh, maybe it was cobra, yeah.
Cobra, viper. It was some sort of snake that was supposed to be worse right. than the other snakes. But the point is, that could go either way as a comment. That could be a comment of, oh, I'm going to go all the way or win and win. Or maybe she really pisses off everyone and loses in the jury, and that's why she has that comment.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I can't say enough how much I'm loving Haley. So as much as I was afraid that somebody who was not an entity at all their first season would come in and do well this time, I don't care about Haley if she's that person. It doesn't bother me one second because she's so great. She has the best sound bites. She has the best faces. She has a great story. So I can't sing her praises enough.
And she has a great ass.
Yeah, so I've been told by you.
Dude, every episode, I'm just like, yes, please keep Haley around for this reason. No, I agree with you beyond, you know, how great of an ass she has. She is really proving her intelligence. And I think we had an idea of her intelligence in her first season, and you talked about it pre-show in the preview episode. You know, she's studying to be a lawyer. And, you know, she has good values. Her head seems to be on straight as far as what she values in life. And I think that's coming through in the game. She's playing with a calmness, right? That tribal council was a mess. But if you look at the way she was, first of all, she was the one who started the conversations when she walked over to Sandra, correct?
Or was it JT first? Who did it first? She was like, oh, if that's how we're going to do it, then she walked over to Sandra.
Right, but that displays the calmness, right? It's not even a question. It's just like, okay, if that's the way we're playing, right. I'm going to handle that. And then she did
that.
But was
that a good move for her?
And yeah, she was screwed anyway. I mean, she's in the minority of her tribe. What else was she going to do?
I think
And let's not forget, she told them to vote for Brad, which would have put that tribe into chaos if he went home.
True, but it would also make their tribe more likely to lose an immunity challenge, which she needs immunity. I think that what she did at this episode was fail to assimilate with her tribe and find cracks and just become one. I mean, we saw Debbie saying in a confessional, Haley's absolutely the next person to go. But that's one person, and I do think Haley could have found a way to fit in with this tribe more. Instead, I think she put more of a target on her back by first being combative with Brad when he was first saying, we're going to all vote together. And she said, I don't remember exactly what she said, but she was basically like, I'm on the outs no matter what, so what do I gain from voting with you? So I don't think she's doing herself a lot of favors, but I hope it doesn't come back and bite her.
Oh, I agree 100%, but it's a short-term, long-term difference for me, where it's sort of the inverse of Malcolm, where in the long term, Malcolm was set, but he got screwed in the short term. Now with Haley, she's screwed in the short term, but she's got herself set up to do better in the long term. If Haley can make the merge, is there any doubt she's going to flip back and ally with Sandra?
No, I don't think there's any doubt about it. But yeah, I just can't see her surviving the next tribal if her tribe loses. Edit wise, I don't see her leaving soon. So that tells me her tribe does not lose the next immunity probably. But doesn't look good on paper.
Or there's some twist we can't anticipate. Exactly. I mean, that's the thing about reading the edit versus the game logic. Sometimes when the edit is a certain way, you just have to say, well, I don't know what's going to happen game logic wise, but there's no way that person goes home next. And I think that's the place we're at with Haley. Because I think it's pretty fair to say that we're going to see Troyzan, Haley, and Sandra allied post-merge. That seems to have been set up pre-merge. And all of them are being given edits to get to the merge.
Right. Yeah, they were all aligned in the first episode we saw, along with Michaela and one other person. I don't remember who that fifth person was.
I don't remember either, but notice how they set up Michaela not being stable with that alliance, and nothing has been done with it since. That could set up her going against them at the merge.
Yeah, Jeff Varner was the other person.
Right, and we know Jeff would flip if he could.
Right.
Although he has been under-edited, so it's hard to say what's going to happen with something like that. So, a lot of interesting dynamics in that sort of alliance that's going to come back together, but that's the interesting thing about Sandra's game, is she's getting a good edit, and her allies are moving forward. So it seems like she's well-positioned editing-wise, and she's also well-positioned strategically, game logic-wise. But editing-wise, could her edit not be read as a winner's edit and more be read as a cocky player who gets blindsided post-merge?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the more plausible route that we're seeing. It was pretty like ballsy, some of the things she was saying. Oh, I know I'm not getting voted out. We've heard her say that in her first season, too. She said that, I believe it was at Burton's boot episode. But man, like for his, sorry, Burton's first boot episode.
Oh, Survivor Pearl yeah. Islands.
Talk
about twists that were unfair. While we're saying that, just, I'll let you continue in a second. Somebody who was screwed by a twist originally, Andrew Savage, another example of that.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, Andrew could have handled things better, but yeah, I see where you're coming from.
No, he certainly learned he could have handled things better, yes. And I think Malcolm could have handled things better, too, by not fucking aligning with JT.
I think big picture-wise, it was a good move for him to align with JT. I think meat shields is something that would work well for Malcolm. and he didn't anticipate this twist that was coming. I can't really pinpoint any specific thing Malcolm did wrong, to be honest. If you have any ideas, I would love to know.
I just fall under the philosophy of don't keep players around that could possibly be a problem and don't befriend them and ally with them. And I think JT falls under this category. I mean, it's literally the same mistake he made in Heroes versus Villains, where he tries to cross tribe lines and ends up doing something that shoots himself in the foot.
Right, yeah, and I think JT definitely shot himself in the foot. As much as I criticized Haley's gameplay, I think JT handled everything much worse. He really was taking a huge gamble, and it obviously didn't pay off. So,
right. And for me, with Survivor, I think a large part of the game that's underplayed, mainly because it's hard to show on television, is that it does matter who you decide to ally with and who you decide to be close with and keep around. I mean, that's why in Redemption Island, one of the biggest moves Boston Rob made was twice voting out Matt Elrod, because he knew if he kept someone who was that wishy-washy around, it couldn't help him in the long term. So even though somebody might think, oh, well, he was originally allied with my tribe, I'm not going to vote him out at the merge, voting him out at the merge actually helped stabilize the game, because it took out the wishy-washy player who could make things unstable and kept all the stable players around, which really solidified and fortified tribal lines. And I think that's something that's very underplayed or very understated when analyzing the show and analyzing strategies, just who you surround yourself with and who you decide to keep around and who you don't. I mean, think about Brad this season. Something you expressed to me is Debbie is the Brandon Hance. We saw the same thing with Coach and Brandon Hance. What happens when you keep those players around in your alliance? It doesn't help you. It doesn't make you look good going forward. That's part of why Sophie was able to beat Coach. And if Brad keeps Debbie around, how can that benefit him in the long run?
Right. And I think we are on different pages when it comes to Brad's strategy and who he's keeping around. I believe that he should be keeping stronger players around him that will keep the target off of him. I think he's setting himself up as the biggest threat when it comes to the merge. There's not a ton of physical threats left in the game. There's Ozzy and JT to a degree. But other than that, there's going to be a big spotlight on Brad.
There's dad bod JT left?
Yeah.
It's not that I'm necessarily on a different page than you about this. I just think Brad's playing a more old school game. The old school game is you, as the alpha, get your tribe, you get your alliance together, and you vote out everyone else who could possibly be a threat to you post-merge, and you get your chickens in a line post-merge, and you keep your alliance together, and that's your strength. Now, Jeremy revolutionized the game in a way that I'm surprised it took that many seasons to do it. I mean, if I was on the show, like in China, I would have just like hid behind James the whole season. And I guess Todd did that a little bit, but I would have just ridden James all the way to the end. Nobody would have seen me as a threat if I'm there next to James. So you sort of find in somebody who's as strong or stronger than you, and you surround yourself with that person or other people. And that's what Jeremy did. So we see the value of that strategy now. But I just think it's important to remember that the strategy of what Brad's using of making yourself the strongest and relying on your alliance, that was the strategy for a long time. And it's a more old school game. That doesn't mean it's necessarily better or worse. A lot of it depends on how you execute it. But that's definitely the game plan he's going for. And we'll see if it works or not. That's the point I'm at. I'm not saying you're wrong. You are completely right. Jeremy proved how great that strategy is and can work. But it's clear Brad's going in the opposite direction. So we just sort of have to say, is this going to work? The edit seems to support him.
Oh, absolutely. I just think we had discussed, you think that he's kind of setting himself to be the person that can win the most immunities. He won't have a lot of competition, yes. Which...
That's part of the strategy.
I mean, Mike Holloway kind of did that. He won out to make it to the end and get $1 million. We keep talking about Mike Holloway, don't we? But I just...
Well, I mean, you always need to call him out. I mean, you've yet to call him out this episode. Do you want to use this opportunity to call him out?
I mean, I can, but right now, I'm just... My heart's kind of broken because the biggest disappointment with this episode is that I was one immunity idol away from getting $100. It sucked.
Fucking JT not only screwed Malcolm, he screwed you out of $100,
I mean, if I JT. I've met JT in the past, but if I ever meet him again, I'm going to have to give him a piece of my mind for that.
Where's my $100, JT?
Exactly. Gosh. But it's not too late. Things could happen. Hopefully Sierra will be gone soon enough.
I think that's the funniest part about this bet to me, as someone who's on the sidelines watching it, is like, both of these girls seem like they're going far at this
They really do. Yeah, and it's just funny how it works out, because like, I am loving Haley so much, and Sierra is absolutely my least favorite person this season.
It's hard to say for me, because there's a tribe of people we don't really see. So I don't know if I dislike them or not. I mean, I tend to dislike that tribe, but they don't exist.
Should we talk about Tabua?
Well, yeah, let's talk about Sarah, because you said that, you know, first episode she had a great edit, and they set her story up. So this is another case of, is this a story they're setting up for the long term? Is Tavua actually the end game here? I don't think they are, because they would be getting more story if they were the end game,
right? I believe so. I mean, I think Sarah's probably going to have an important story, but, I mean, we're just not seeing it now. And as I told you pre-show, I'm ready to take Sarah off of the table as one of our big five that we talk about at the end of the episodes.
Okay, so we've already talked about Haley and Brad, right? And we talked a little bit about Sandra. So we talked about the three of them, right? As the three of the big five. Now we're moving Sarah. We will replace Sarah in a minute. But the other one of the big five is in this tribe.
That's correct.
And it's Suri. She didn't get much of an episode or an edit this episode, but the other person her story is tied up with did, Ozzy.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that, and we definitely see similarities to Ozzy's story this season and kind of the edit he got in South Pacific.
Yeah, I don't even say it's similarities. I think it's exactly the same. I mean, it's not often in Survivor that you see visual cues, right? They use a lot of audio cues, and they use a lot of like character quote cues, but with Ozzy, they literally shoot things the same way as with him. And I still remember when he was on Redemption Island in South Pacific, and they had all those shots of him in the water and surviving and blah blah blah, and I was like, this is the optimal Ozzy edit. It was actually a good thing story-wise for them that Ozzy was the one to go to Redemption Island, because it gave them stuff to fill the episode with and actually use Redemption Island. Well, again, when he's out there fishing and spearfishing, they use the same type of shots. He's literally getting the same story. That doesn't bode well for his chances of winning. I don't even know if that bodes well for his chances of staying around with the way alpha males are targeted this season.
No, it doesn't necessarily bode well for him, but I think it's kind of fan service, to be honest. The casual fans love Ozzy. They love seeing him in his element. So I think that scene was enough to kind of satisfy millions of people who are watching this show and be like, yes, that's my guy. That's Ozzy. I don't think it necessarily means that he's going to do well. I think that they're just putting that out there for familiarity, basically.
So that actually, based upon what you're saying, that actually could be a setup for him going home. It could be like, oh, here's Ozzy's big moment this season. Oh, he's going next.
It could. We haven't seen enough to really convince me that that's going to happen. But, I mean, I wouldn't have said Malcolm was going home.
Well, and I did say to you last week making predictions, I didn't say Malcolm, but I said it could be someone random. And I said I picked like Debbie as possibly someone random. Right. So I did say to you that someone random might go home. Didn't I say that?
I believe so.
Right. So I still see that happening a little bit here, where somebody we don't really expect to go home goes next because of the edits. You know, we know it's probably not Suri. We know it's probably not Sandra, Haley, and Brad. And we know probably not Troyzan as well. So if Troyzan has an idol and they vote for him, wouldn't it be logical he votes for someone like Ozzy?
Yes and no. I mean, I have the impression that if I'm in the minority on a tribe after a tribe swap, I don't want to get rid of the person that's going to help me win immunity. But, of course, not all the players would think that way.
Yeah, is Troyzan that savvy?
Gosh, I don't know. Probably not.
But I think your hesitation answers the question. So did we have anything with Ciri this episode?
I think she
no?
got a line. I think we might have heard her early in the episode talking about how Troyzan's kind of next to go. That might have even been last episode. I don't remember exactly. I thought it was this episode, though.
Right, which is difficult because we're starting to see the pieces get moved for post-merge, and it doesn't seem to bode well for her chances, as I said a few minutes ago, that this tribe is being severely under-edited right now. I mean, part of it was this is the episode where they had to focus on the other two tribes because it was the big twist, but at the same time, they gave the big moment on Tavua last week to Troyzan finding the idol, and this week they gave it to Ozzy, which in my mind is why it kind of sets up Troyzan versus Ozzy at Tribal. It's just, it doesn't seem to bode well for any of their chances long-term, though, the way this tribe's being edited.
No, I agree. I don't think the winner's coming from this tribe, necessarily.
Okay, so who's the fifth person you want to add? Now, we don't necessarily, this is the thing. When we're talking about these big edits, they're not necessarily winners edits, right? It's like we were just talking about with Ken. I tracked Ken last season. It was possible he won, but we saw how important his edit was, even though he didn't win. Likewise, Ty in his season, the mistake I made when analyzing was I went all in and say he was the winner, even though he didn't win, he still had a big important edit. And that's what we're looking at here, right? I mean, even going back to Survivor Philippines, Child Rapist had a big edit, and he was super important to the theme of the season, even though he didn't win the season. So these five we're tracking now, they may not win, but they're important to the season. And I think the fifth person you're going to add, we don't think is going to win, but we think he's going to be important to the theme
right,
again.
Right, exactly. And you said again, because that person is Ty. I think Ty had a great quote this episode where he said, "This time I'm playing with my head and I'm not playing with my heart." So I think we're definitely going to see a different journey for Ty, and we're going to see him struggle with that more throughout the game.
Yeah, and that sort of echoes his journey last season as well, when he had to decide whether he wanted to be a bad guy or a good guy, and he ultimately went with his heart and was a good guy and kept Aubrey around rather than aligning with Scott.
Exactly.
So it's sort of repeating his story as well, which doesn't bode well for his chances to win, but it does bode well for his chances to be around the fact that they're ramping this story up again.
Right, yeah. I think it would actually be pretty interesting if we see Ty go on the opposite end of the spectrum, kind of play a cutthroat game, and still get to the end and lose.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in his constitution to be that cutthroat, though. I think he would like it to be, but a lot of the times when he starts talking strategically, there's someone influencing him. I mean, we saw that with Scott, and we saw that with Brad already this season. So I just don't know if it's in Ty's, as much as he wants it to be, I don't think it's in him to be that way.
Right, I agree.
Now, let's look forward to next episode to sort of put a cap on our conversation here today. I've already sort of hinted at, I think Ozzy could go. But if it's not Ozzy on that tribe, who do you think would go? And then on the other tribes, who do you think would go?
Okay, Tavua is the hardest
and
one
do you
for
think,
me.
Well, before you continue, do you think they're going to stay in their tribes, or are we going
to
have a twist?
It's possible. I thought about that. They could go back to two, have 8 versus 8, but they usually kind of tease that in the previews, so I think they're going to stick with the three tribes.
Okay, so Tavua is the hardest.
Tavua is the hardest. I mean, the only thing that I go back to is we saw Troyzan kind of calling out Andrea. So if I had to put my money on anybody, I would say Andrea would be the next one to go. I don't think she's had enough screen time to have kind of a long-term game. So it wouldn't surprise me to go see her go pre-merge.
I think that is a fine assessment. I think the two people who could go there are Ozzy and Andrea. So I would not be surprised if either of them went.
Right. But yeah, moving on to other tribes, I think it's a little more, there's a little more to work with here. Mana, like I said, I think Haley would be in trouble. It's hard to see any other scenario, potentially Debbie. And I say that mainly based on what we saw in the preview.
Right, but usually people shown in the preview don't go. We saw that with Sandra last week, right? Where Sandra was in the preview and then she didn't go home this week. And that seems to have been a Survivor truth forever, that they never show the person who's going home.
I wouldn't say never, but it's definitely more often than not. It's kind of a red herring when you see something in the preview.
Maybe somebody can name someone out there, because I don't know. This is something curious. Does anyone remember or know? There's got to be some Survivor nerd out there listening to this who just knows everything. They have to know if somebody's ever been in the preview who's been voted out. I would love to know.
I mean, I'm
that.
Almost positive of it. I can remember the feeling of saying, oh, the obvious person based on the preview did go home. But I couldn't give you an example off the top of my head.
See, I remember the opposite, that no one in the preview has ever go home. So I would love evidence to prove me wrong. Well, please, someone out there, prove me wrong.
I rewatch seasons all the time. So when I come across one of those previews, I will let you know.
Yes, please do. And anyone who can do that right now, do it. I want to be proven wrong on this. I would love evidence on this. Yeah. I want this to be like either the fly theory, where the fly dooms you. As I pointed out, that's my theory. I pointed that out. Anyone who ever hears the fly theory, that's mine. Just like if you ever hear Survivor hacks from now on, that's mine. Game hacks, that's mine. Likewise, let's make this a theory or not. This is something I've tracked for years. I want to be proven wrong, though. Please prove me wrong.
Right.
So when we're talking about that tribe, we have Haley and Debbie. And Debbie, maybe she does go home. Maybe she pulls a Brandon Hansen, goes nuts, and that's why she's in the
preview. Yeah, and I want to talk about that a little bit. I've told you that I'm seeing Debbie as Brandon Hansen. And that comparison, for me, Brandon Hansen, when he played the first time, I think he had good intentions. I think he was an enjoyable character to watch. I know that wasn't the case for most viewers, but I enjoyed his struggle. I saw earnesty with him. And when he came out, he got so much flack from the audience, and it really jaded him and it hardened him. And when he came back the second time, he was just a broken guy, and he was so bitter and angry. And I'm kind of seeing that with Debbie. She was fun. She was quirky. I've talked about this in the podcast, how I enjoyed Debbie the first time, but I think people kind of gave her a hard time about the kookiness. Even Jeff did in that reunion. And I think she's coming back a different person and kind of angry. And it doesn't make sense, but I don't know. It's very frustrating. It reminds me of Brandon's story arc.
Well, I think what you're honing in on here is it's important to remember that when we watch these games, these players aren't always cast because they're healthy. And when you look at someone like Debbie and you look at someone like Brandon and even someone like Philip and definitely someone like Coach, part of the reason they get on the show and come back is because their problems in their psychology make them entertaining. And I don't know what that says about us. We can debate that morally, what that says about us. I actually enjoy Philip because I like to see him overcome those things. And I think in his second season, he really worked hard to improve himself and overcome sort of his social awkwardness and whatever his issues are. But someone like Brandon, his issues, which are clearly Hans family issues, right? If you watched any of their shows, if you saw Russell, there's clearly something deeply wrong with that family. And we see this in psychology. This is legitimate theory. They do family systems theories where things like the alcoholism of a grandparent can affect multi-generations. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's alcoholism with the Hans. I don't know what the issue is. But the point is, there's clearly something there. And it's the same thing with Debbie. There's clearly something off here. It's not like she's super damaged in the sense that it's killing her or it's destructive, but the show doesn't seem to be doing her any favors. And it might not be the show itself, but it's the community around it or the way she's treated. But something with the experience isn't bringing out the best in her, which is a result of whatever her issues are.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. So it's going to be interesting to see what even triggers this. Like, we see her yelling at Brad Culpepper and saying, I trusted you and you broke my heart. And, I mean, nothing we've seen could fit in line with what she's saying. So something big must happen.
Maybe, but we saw this last season too, didn't we? Where she always fancied herself as the smartest player on her tribe, And as the alpha.
I mean, to be fair, so, for the smartest player, she is the only person who correctly spelled Malcolm's name on her tribe.
I think Debbie has an intelligence. Yeah. There are things I really, really like about Debbie. Just like I think Coach is a smart guy, too.
Yeah.
I do. I don't think you end up doing and acting the way you are without being smart, without having intelligence. But there's something about her and power and being in charge and having to be seen as important. And you can see how someone like that would have trouble with a Brad Culpepper, who's an NFL player, who's used to being sort of just that leader by example and just carrying that air of, you know, this is what I am and I'm important. You can see how she would have trouble with that because she had sort of trouble with that her last season. So it's hard to know if something big happens or not. Or, I mean, did the stuff that happened with Brandon in his second season, was that big that caused him to go off?
I mean, it was all about Philip, and it was a personality clash, and we saw that kind of building up throughout the first several episodes.
Right, so maybe Brad is to Debbie as Philip was to Brandon.
Okay, potentially.
Could be interesting there. So yeah, on that tribe, we're looking at either Debbie or Haley, mm-hmm. with sort of maybe if they go to tribal. Or maybe if they don't and Debbie just has a Brandon Hance moment and has to quit or go home, that sort of seems what could save Haley if they do go to tribal. Because it doesn't seem like Haley's going to go edit-wise, right. But game logic, it's hard to deny she's in a shitty position. Mm-hmm. And then the last tribe, Sandra's tribe, that's the Mana tribe?
No, that's the Nuku tribe.
Nuku, okay, I don't know tribe names. That's the Ravu tribe?
Ravu tribe from Fiji?
Yeah, that was the reference okay. I was making.
Yeah, I think it's fairly obvious on paper who would be the next to go. But then again, it goes back to the preview showing that they're talking about JT.
Yes.
So
that's why it seems to be Tavua will go to tribal next week.
Yeah. Would they vote out JT knowing they just lost Malcolm? They have Jeff Varner, who's not great at challenges. They have Sandra, who's not great at challenges. Would they get rid of their potentially strongest person? Maybe Michaela's the strongest?
Oh, I think Michaela's stronger than JT at this point. Michaela was a beast in challenges last season. Are you kidding me?
True, but I don't know. I don't want to get into guys versus girls or any of that, but...
No, I understand what you're saying, but I think this is one of those cases where JT is getting older and he's on his way mm-hmm. down and Michaela's in her prime. Like, Michaela is a physical freak, dude. Like, the way she performed last season, like, I was super impressed too. With her.
I think I called her probably the strongest female competitor ever on the show.
It's quite possible. It is quite possible.
But yeah, do you think that they would vote out JT and risk... moving forward with a pretty weak tribe overall?
I think it all depends on who JT targets. If it's the choice between JT and Sandra, JT will go home because Sandra won't play the long-term game. She'll just say, I have to survive 3 more days because that ends up being her fallback. And it'll be JT at that point. But if they go after someone like Jeff Varner, which arguably was a little bit foreshadowed because he screwed things up, right, in the mm-hmm. challenge? So... I could see Varner going maybe, and if they go after
and
Varner,
one
JT
thing
will
that
stay.
We haven't touched on, based on Malcolm's interview, he says that there is a personality conflict between Sandra and Aubrey that they haven't really been showing. So that makes me wonder if they could potentially go after each other.
Yeah, I think that may be a long term storyline. That I think Aubrey will be the one to turn if Sandra goes home. So it's interesting Malcolm says that, but it's also interesting that. If that does happen, how they haven't set that up at all. So.
Yeah, you would think they would. So, yeah, I think you could be right that Tabua might be the one going to Tribal Council.
All right. Well, we'll see if that happens next episode. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.